Our friends, the enemy from across the Pennines being a mountain chain that go down the centre of Britain like that.
So where you come from was Lancashire, which was on the
west side. Liverpool, where the Beatles came from.
Is that where you were born, in Liverpool?
12 miles from there, in Lancashire, in St. Helens.
What year was that, Mr. Lathwaite?
1915.
What was your father's occupation?
My father was a lumber merchant and had been a plasterer by trade. And when I was born, he was operating a plastering business in St. Helens in Lancashire with the beginnings of a lumber yard and what they called a jobbing business in those days, a house repairing business, which if you wanted a new chimney on your house, you'd phone him up and he'd quote a price and do the chimney.
Where did
build you a house.
Where did your father import the lumber from?
Well, I think most of the lumber in Britain was from Scandinavia in those days. We had a considerable amount of plywood, and I think that probably came from Canada or from the United States.
You mentioned, when I was talking to you before, that your father had emigrated to Canada. When did he come?
I think in 1911, and he went back to join the army for the 1914 war.
I see. Which regiment did he join? You can't recall.
I don't know.
He joined the army though for the war years.
The army, yes.
And he remained in England after the war?
Yes, he didn't come back to Canada. He had intended to come back, but never did. He bought the beginnings of the business then, and the firm is still in operation. My father gave the business to my elder brother, who died quite recently, and the business is now being run by my brother's son and his widow.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school at Cowley School in St. Helens in Lancashire. It's an old endowed grammar school. Boys' school, as I told you.
And where did you go to take your training to be a teacher?
Well, I started as a teacher in the old plan of pupil teacher, and I left high school, I did 2 years student teaching as a pupil teacher with the St. Helens Local Education Authority, and then I went to college. I went to Chester College. And after Chester, I went on to a specialist college in physical education, which was a branch of Leeds University, Carnegie Physical Training College, it was called in those days. It's now Carnegie College of Physical Education, but it's still in the same location. It's in Leeds and is on the same grounds as the City of Leeds Training College for teachers.
Why did you specialize in physical education?
I don't know, really. I'd always wanted to be a physical education teacher. I was a fairly good athlete, I suppose, and I played a lot of rugby football. I was just crazy about things athletic, if you like.
How many years did you teach before the war?
Well, I graduated in 1938, and I taught 38 and the beginning of 39 and 40 until July 1940, and then I was allowed to get into the armed forces in July 1940. Until that time, we had been in a reserved occupation, and I believe when I did finally get in, I was still in a reserved occupation. But someone at the Air Ministry must have been able to pull strings to get us in.
Why did you choose the Air Force?
I suppose it was the new thing. I was a little less than steeped in tradition about the armed services. My father was in the army. I probably felt that the Air Force was a new thing. Flying was a new idea, and that was probably what attracted me, I think.
Mm-hmm. So what were the steps which led to your being sent to Canada during the war?
Well, the formation of the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan, the lack of space in England to do all the flying training. I suppose the second consideration was the weather in Canada was very much more suitable for flying training than it was in Britain, and particularly in places like Moose Jaw, to which we came. A flying training school at Moose Jaw could operate right round the clock with not too much worry about the weather. I think that was the main consideration.
I see.
Of the Royal Air Force and getting all these flying stations in the Commonwealth countries. The weather was better.
What year did you come to Canada?
In November 1940.
1940.
Yeah.
What was your main activities with the Air Force?
Well, I was a member of the administrative and special duties branch. My main duties were as a physical fitness officer for most of the time. We did, as I say, various administrative jobs as well.
What physical qualities do you think were desirable for a pilot? How did this relate to the training which you would have undertaken?
I think, speaking technically, general good health, but to be highly specific, I don't think that there's any one particular component of fitness that one could say is necessary for a pilot any more than any other, mm-hmm. except perhaps a component of abdominal strength. If you got right down to fine detail, said, what particular component could you point to? I'd say a pretty good stomach, mm-hmm. and stomach wall to maybe hold the blood in the right place while you're doing flying maneuvering.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything else. You see, virtually that's what a pressure suit is now in high speed or high altitude, or even the astronaut work. They have a pressure suit which, when you're under large forces of G, holds the viscera and the general structure of the human body in the same place while you're under the great stress. So if I suppose in a sense the earliest flying suits, pressure suits, were, that was the main reason that they were successful, was to stop the force of gravity from displacing various organs or making those organs fill up with blood and emptying other organs of blood. For instance, when you pull out of a dive, you black out because the blood flows down towards you. The bottom of this large belly receptacle you have, and lots of people who have a big belly have a big receptacle there, and the legs and so on, and the blood flows away from the brain, and the reverse happens in an inside loop, you can get red out.
Mm-hmm. Could we change the topic now to something a little more general? What was while you're in Canada during the war years, what was your kind of impression of the Canada during the war effort?
Well, of course, I enjoyed it very much. I was a little bit influenced by my father telling me what a great spot it was and what a good country, and the idea of people not being so hidebound in tradition or by tradition, if that's the one of the functions of tradition, I don't know. But there was generally an air of freedom in Canada which I liked. And above all, I found that the people were very much more interested in your ideas. In Britain, it was a slower process to try and get things done. One could ask people for help, and they probably might say, "Well, you can't do that, old boy." Rather than the Canadian attitude, which seemed to be, "Come on, let's see what we can do to help." This is what I found interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting observation. I understand the last years of the war you returned to England.
Yes, I spent approximately 6 years in the service, and 3 years I spent in Canada and 3 years in England. And I was on training stations all the time. I suppose I did what I'm doing now, in a sense. I'm training young leaders to be teachers or leaders in situations very much like teaching, I guess.
What kind of leadership training then were you specifically involved in with the forces?
Well, the physical fitness officer was, as it sounds like, responsible for the fitness training of the students, plus the skill training, the instruction in sports and the skills of sports. And in addition to that, we'd give some instruction in the physiology of high altitude flying, that kind of thing, which interested the flying trainees very much. The psychology of the young flying officer's job, and things like that. Mm-hmm. The admin duties were very interesting and were of great experience, I thought. For instance, one would run a track meet and have only a small number of people to do it. We had command track meets that were quite a challenge to a young flying officer, as I was then. Went into the service and someone said, "Could you run a track meet? The whole command is sending people, and your station will house, feed, sleep them, and entertain them while they're here, and they're going to be here for a week to do this track meet, and there'll be trials and there'll be practices and there'll be, have you got enough knives, forks and spoons for them?" And so on and so on. It was a most interesting training in just general administration as well.
I see. Where were you discharged?
I was discharged in London.
What year?
And
what date?
Now, what was it? Almost July 46. I almost went 6 years. Well, I did go 6 years.
What did you do right after the war?
Well, I was bound by my agreement with the St. Helens Education Authority to go back to teach for them for a small period. I don't remember specifically what it was, but a certain number of months to give my notice that I was leaving. Mm-hmm. And in Christmas 1945 I was asked if I would come back and go to Ridley College in St. Catharines, Ontario to run the physical fitness program. Mm-hmm. And run the cadet corps.
Air cadet corps?
Yes.
Or school age
yes.
Cadets?
Secondary school. Well, actually, the Ridley College is a large private school in Ontario and has a junior school as well as a senior school. So the boys virtually are from the age of 6 right through to 18 in grade 12 and grade 13. The school is very, very well equipped. We had a swimming pool even in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
An indoor swimming pool heated in a very modern gymnasium building. And very, very fine playing fields all around the school.
What brought you to UBC?
Well, I found that the program at Ridley College was a little bit traditional, and the idea of the physical education teacher did not suit my idea of what should be done, and I resigned for that reason, that I did not like the job. And I knew that my particular training would be more useful at UBC because of things like English rugby being prominent, and my particular background in skills would be very useful, and I thought perhaps that there wouldn't be too many applicants for the job, say, of English rugby coach at UBC. So I wrote to UBC and said I was in Canada and was available, and did they have any openings, and by luck there was an opening at UBC.
Mm.
And it was my understanding that there was a short list of about 6, and I got the job.
Can you give me the date?
Yes, the 1st of July 1947 was the date I joined UBC. It might be of interest to note that the person who interviewed me on behalf of UBC was Colonel Schrum, who had been the Army CO at one time. It was then Dr. Gordon Schrum, who later was head of the physics department and Dean of Graduate Studies, and later on Chancellor of Simon Fraser University.
So you were at UBC in 1947. The following year was when the Air Force Squadron started on campus, Reserve Squadron, which you became involved in. Could you tell how you became involved then?
Yes. I was always very interested in the idea of training young adults. After my exposure to it in the Air Force, and I had been very keen to get a university job for that very reason, that the adult education appealed to me much more than the high school job. And so when I came, I was very interested to find out whether the COTC idea was carried on in Canada as it was in Britain in the old days. The gentleman soldier idea. I had some experience of that myself in England in the old days when it was customary for the young men to join the reserves.
Did you to go back? Maybe I missed that. Did you were you in an OTC in England before the war?
No, I was a little too young at that time, and when I was away at college, they didn't have such a unit at my colleges, but I had known a good many young men who had joined the Reserve Air Force in England, and I'd been interested in it.
Did you continue your story how you took a post with the RUF?
Yes, well, at the particular time, I was looking, mainly, I suppose, at that time for something to do in the summertime when one was free, and I heard that in 1949 there was to be a camp at Abbotsford for the Western universities, and although there was no establishment for me at the UBC unit at that time, I did make application and was taken on as a special in a special capacity, I guess, to help run the physical fitness program and the drill program at Abbotsford in the summer of 1949. And after that, the establishment for the university squadron was increased to include an adjutant or training officer, and I then was able to join the UBC unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember my exact date of joining, but it should be available.
Well, you were with the unit officially in the year 49-50.
Yes.
That
would be the fall of 1949.
Yes. The commanding officer was Roy Haynes,
yes.
I believe.
Squadron leader A.R. Haynes, yes. Roy had I don't remember now whether I believe Roy had been in the English department as a sort of graduate assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I don't think he was officially on the professorial ranks. I don't think he was an assistant professor at that time. I think he was an instructor in the Department of English,
mm-hmm.
teaching the English 100 type course.
Yes.
And the reason Roy did not stay was, I suppose, the lack of advanced qualifications which would be necessary and increase as the years went on in peacetime and at the university. So Roy went back and took flying training in the Air Force and got his wings, I think.
How would you account for Mr. Haynes' interest in the university squadron?
Well, he had been in the service during the war,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to carry on with it in the reserve capacity when he came out. One must not deny also the economic aspect. The salaries were very low. My first salary at the University of British Columbia was $2,600 a year,
mm-hmm.
That was as an instructor. My salary was raised to $3,000 in Christmas, as I remember, at Christmas 1947. But it was less than I'd been living on as an officer in the services.
That's surprising.
It was less than I was earning at Ridley College in St. Catharines. the salaries were low, and one had to look for extra money.
You'd be referring mostly to the summer training, though, wouldn't you? Because the winter term was really probably not too financially remunerative.
No, it was really to find an extra source of income during the term, if you like, by the night parade, but that was a small amount. 35 days pay at one's rank per year, as I remember. And we were paid at the rank we held, at the pay that we would have received if we'd been in the permanent force, less marriage allowance. We did not get marriage allowance, and but otherwise we got the pay of a flying officer or whatever rank we were. I was a flying officer in those days. No, I don't remember. Flight lieutenant, I think. That's awful, I can't remember.
Can you tell me what it was like getting the squadron underway? It just started up on campus, right?
Yes. Well, it was pretty easy for us because it was just like stepping out of the wartime and carrying on with our wartime work. I'd been in officer training all the time, virtually, and it wasn't a big jump at all. It was very nice just to come back and do it again.
Well, how about organizing your parade nights?
Well, we had the facilities that the university had so thoughtfully provided by the energies of the aforesaid Dr. Schrum, and we had a place that we could parade, even in the rain. We could parade indoors in the armories, and we had enough classroom space to do the lecture program. We were better off than most people because we had an officer's mess, and we could have an evening meal together before the parade, and that was what happened in the old days. The cadets who wished to could use the facilities of the officer's mess. We had kitchen facilities, and we employed a cook, and we had an evening meal before the parade in our own officer's mess.
How about the syllabus? Was this all detailed from above, or?
Yes, there was a rudimentary type syllabus.